I kind of think about it as, you know, you cast your net wide, you yeah. try to bring everything in, and then you put everything in Spanx.
Yeah.
You kind of bring it together. You're like, okay, this is what we're focusing on. Like, think tiny. I think it's great to kind of have the opportunity to do both. Think broad and then just kind of refine. Hello, you've reached Hotline Design Podcast. How may we help you? And welcome back to Hotline Design Podcast. In this week's episode, in our first ever two-part series, we take on the first of the iconic double diamond design process and explore the brilliant shine and luster of discover and define. So ladies, I have to know, how have your weeks been?
Hey Lauren, thank you for asking. So strangely, it's actually Easter right now while we're recording. I hope everyone celebrating had a lovely Easter. And this week, I've actually been thinking how Easter seems to be sadly so much less important than Christmas, because we definitely wouldn't be recording on Christmas.
This is true.
But on Easter, we're fine with it. So this week, a lot of drawing. I continued that adventure and I'm getting kind of like deeper and deeper into it. I've been doing a few courses on Skillshare, hashtag not sponsored yet. And the other thing I've been doing, which I'm not sure if you're ready for, but I started redesigning my portfolio, trying to learn web.
You're right. We were not ready for that. We are never ready for it.
Never. And since I'm basically like trying to pick up Webflow as I learn it, just be prepared for the next 6 months for me to talk about it every week. But yeah, that's me. How about you? How was your week?
I have actually been trying to draw and procreate as well, but maybe because I'm not really very inspired, or I haven't been that inspired recently, I've been kind of struggling to think about what to draw. Maybe landscapes. I've been trying to copy things off my phone, but I think, you know, I still need a bit of time to get the hang of it. Maybe I should start actually doing some Skillshare courses. And this is mention number two of Skillshare. So yeah, we promise that we're not sponsored by them. On the work front, it was a little bit of a rush this week before Easter because we had a stakeholder meeting at work, and the product that I've been working on, I'm also kind of managing on the side and just trying to rally the overall team to kind of finish it by our deadline. And it's been a lot of trying to come up with a project plan and play back where we are to stakeholders to get stakeholder sign off. So that was something I was quite stressed about, but I'm glad that it's gone well. And I think our overall approach has been quite well received. So now it's really down to me to crack on with the designs and also work together with the lead developer and my team to try and implement some of what I've designed. So that's going to be really exciting. And I think the third thing that I'd like to mention is just, it's been a bit of a weird like week and a half, because I've been reading a lot about anti-Asian hate crimes in the US, and obviously, you know, I think there seems to be a lot of focus on this in the States, but there have been tons of incidents like that in the UK as well. In fact, since coronavirus started, I think the incidents of anti-Asian hate crimes in the UK against East and Southeast Asian people, or people of ESEA descent, has actually increased by about 300%. Me and a couple of other colleagues at work are just trying to raise awareness of this at work, because we haven't really heard a statement put out yet from leadership within the UK branch of our firm. And we think that it's really important to raise awareness of this and try and combat stereotypes or inform people that this is happening, so that there's more awareness about this issue. And hopefully we'll be able to take mitigating action against these crimes, or even try and equip people with basic things like bystander training to teach people how to intervene in situations like these. So yeah, a bit of a downer. I think it's just a bit sad trying to read about, it's a bit sad reading about incident after incident. So yeah, that's been my week so far.
Yeah, and Yusin, thank you so much for kind of taking that initiative, and it's such an important issue. And if any kind of training does get approved, I would love to do the bystander training, because it's completely unacceptable and it's entirely misinformed and from a place of really kind of terrible hate. So please do keep me updated.
Thanks, Lauren. Yeah, I will.
And then in terms of my week, for those keeping score at home, I have finally moved flats. So it has been a week full of lifting really heavy boxes and just trying to unpack and get everything sorted. And I've actually taken the week off, which has been really great to kind of have the time to set everything up, reach out to councils, let them know I've moved. There's just so much to do. But one thing that I really love about this flat is that, like, for once in my life in the UK, there are, like, real neighbors. Because in my previous flat, it was just a bunch of, like, kind of young yuppies and everyone's very transient. So in this flat, they actually have, like, a Slack group for everyone. And it's so cute to see all the neighbors kind of interacting. So I truly feel at home. And then kind of on the design front, I've just been focusing on ordering furniture, which, you know, has forced me to kind of take a look at, like, color schemes, which I'm still really trying to kind of stay away from. So I'm just ordering a lot of, like, wood and black things. And I've ordered an IKEA table that they're very kind of pleased to deliver it, but in a month. So we will not have a kitchen table for a month. So we've got a lot of trays and we're just going to be eating on the couch, which is kind of depressing yet fun.
A lot of families just do that.
Yeah.
Even, like, not even thinking about a table, so.
Yeah, I feel like we're, like, truly, like, a middle America family, like, ready with our, like, TV dinners and our trays, so. Or, you know, we can kind of make it cool and do, like, an indoor picnic and sit down and have snacks that way. But other than that, in terms of Easter, I woke up this morning and there was a full-fledged Easter egg hunt for me that my partner put on. So I've just had a wonderful morning collecting all the Easter eggs. I only stepped on one of them. It was like a packet, like it was a carton of mini eggs. And I stepped on it. And chocolate that is crushed still tastes as good. But speaking about things that only keep getting better, even if they were crushed, the double diamond. So what is the double diamond? So the double diamond is the name of a design process model that was popularized by the British Design Council in 2005. It was adapted from the divergence-convergence model proposed in 1996 by Hungarian-American linguist Bella Benathy. And the double diamond design process suggests that there should be four phases. One, discover. Two, define. Three, develop. And four, deliver.
So in 2003, the Design Council took kind of this idea from Bella Banathy. And because they were in the process of kind of popularizing the value of design management as a practice, Richard Iserman, who just joined from Whirlpool, took kind of this process to the rest of the team and wanted to answer this question: how do we describe the design process? And together with the team, they kind of came up with this double diamond. And one of the quote from Richard was: the team put in the work trying to define design process, methods, etc. What we did with the double diamond was codify it, rename the steps, and popularize it. It was important work, but we were certainly standing on the shoulders of giants. So yeah, people do kind of refer to it as Design Council's double diamond, but I think it's important to say that it was a refinement and it wasn't necessarily kind of their process from the start.
Yeah, that's a great recap on how the double diamond came about. Exactly. We always like to try and think about the history of the double diamond process, and so that was super insightful. So we also did briefly go through the four stages within the double diamond process, which are discover, define, develop, and deliver. So with the first part, which is discover, the process normally starts by questioning the challenge and quickly leads to research to identify user needs. Then we move into define, which is the second phase where we make sense of the findings based on user research to try and understand how user needs and the problem align. And the result of this is to create a design brief, which clearly defines the challenge based on these insights. We then move into the develop phase, which focuses on developing, testing, and refining multiple potential solutions. And finally, we move into deliver, which involves selecting a single solution that works and preparing this for launch.
So when thinking about the double diamond, I always like to remember that discover and define are really trying to look at designing the right thing, whereas develop and deliver are looking at designing the thing right. So the first diamond centers around finding the problems that are worth solving and making sure we aren't just looking at the symptoms of a problem, but rather the deep needs of people, while the second phase looks at developing ideas and prototyping solutions. Spoilers, but we're going to talk about more about the second diamond next week.
I think what I like most about a double diamond is, actually, I'll preface with the fact that obviously there are a lot of design methodologies out there. So like you have human-centered design, the design thinking process, and obviously you have the double diamond. All of them kind of having very similar steps, they have a different kind of angle on it, but the steps are very similar and how you approach it is very similar. But I think what I like about the double diamond is the visual side of it, because I think when you talk about it to your team, that you can easily see kind of like in the first stage, we diverge, we collect as much as possible. And then in the next stage, we converge and we have to make sure that whatever we collected, we prioritize it and we look at it like this is not the time to come up with ideas and stuff. You see exactly what you're supposed to do. And I wonder if it makes it a little bit easier to kind of sell and understand. And
yeah, I really like that. I kind of think about it as, you know, you cast your net wide, you try to bring everything in, and then you put everything in Spanx. You kind of bring it together. You're like, okay, this is what we're focusing on. Like, think tiny. So, I think it's great to kind of have the opportunity to do both. Think broad and then just kind of refine.
Exactly, yeah. And I think just the visual side of it just makes it so much easier to get across to people who might have heard about it for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And about kind of like hearing about it for the first time and like the historics of it, we're going to bring you back in time a little bit.
So the Design Council was established by Winston Churchill's wartime government in December of 1944, and this was to support Britain's economic recovery. So the Council of Industrial Design, as it was called back in the day, now renamed to the British Design Council, had the founding purpose of promoting, by all practical means, the improvement of design in the products of British industry. 77 years later, the purpose and the activities have evolved to meet the economic and social needs of the day. So from their early focus on elevating the UK's industrial design standards in post-war Britain to the current work of tackling complex socio-economic challenges, they have looked to champion design and its ability to make life better for everyone. In 2011, the Design Council was merged with the Commission for Architecture and Built Environment, also known as CABE. And this extends their remit to include design in built environment, as well as the ability to shape healthier, more productive places. So when I was looking into this, I was kind of wondering, like, what are the foundations for the British Design Council? How is it funded? Turns out it's kind of like separated from the government and is now actually a royal charter charity.
What I love most about it is I think it shows the importance of design in society and how it was important back then. It's important today.
Yeah, it's really great to see, because I feel like sometimes when we evangelize design, we can feel like it's quite a new thing to do. But it's great that Winston Churchill, a longtime listener, first time caller, has always backed design.
Love it.
Cool. So thank you for the historical side. That was obviously really interesting. And if we kind of go back to what Lavinia said just now, actually, about how the double diamond is a really useful way of packaging the design process just because it's so visual. If you think of a diamond shape, we often start with discover just because it's divergent, it helps us keep an open mind, it allows us to look at the landscape to see what's going on, and it just kind of puts us in that mindset to discover or to find out as much as possible about some of the challenges that our users are facing. So we think broadly, we try and observe how people use the product, and we kind of talk to them to get their insights. And that all really maps back to this idea of human-centered design, where if we want to make sure that a product is useful for people's needs, we need to go out to the field and understand how they're using it in the first place and some of the obstacles that they might face doing so. So what are some of the methods that we would use in the discover stage? So first of all, to get started, we need to have a driving question or a challenge, and sometimes it can be really useful to have a design brief for this purpose. It can be really useful to understand the objectives for even coming up with this product in the first place, to try and interview stakeholders to see what the ultimate aim of developing this product is. So once you have spoken to different people, both within the business and as well as your users, or if you have any research that you can kind of comb through to get a brief sense of, you know, what the challenge is people are facing with this product or why you want to improve it, that's a really useful base for anchoring your discover process in. And then as you go through different research methods to try and get some insights from the users, so we did talk about this in our previous episode on user interviews as well, some of the ways in which you can run really open-ended user interviews to try and capture as many frustrations that users are experiencing, or even good things that they like about your product. Once you have this raw data in hand, you can start clustering them. You can write insights on different post-its and kind of bring them together in smaller themes, and that just really helps you get an overall picture. You can also do that through rainbow charts, which I think Lauren is a really big advocate of. So there are all of these methods to help you take that broad user insight and start grouping it into themes that are that you can work with more easily. So with research methods, we've talked a bit about this, but there are two main ways of conducting research. So that's primary, and you can do that through surveys, user interviews, which we're a big fan of, or even observation, where you kind of go out into the field and really observe users as they go about their daily processes using that product. So that's more ethnographic, kind of observing them as they, you know, use your product in their domain. Or sometimes you can also use diary studies, where you get people to kind of capture a written record of their experiences using that product. And these are all really insightful ways for understanding how the users use their product and kind of integrate that into their daily lives. What you can also do to get some more context as well is secondary research. So there's probably going to be quite a lot of different literature on the web. You can definitely comb through that as well. Or sometimes it helps to kind of go into forums and see what people are saying about your product. That will also count as secondary research. And then before converging, you'll have all of these unstructured research findings in place that are then ready for you to kind of look through in the next phase.
Definitely. So then you get into the define phase, and this is another phase where kind of you come back in and you start to converge. So in some projects I've done, I know that after the discover phase, it's like I've got just folders upon folders of like random research, and I feel like I know a lot, but it's very, very disorganized. So this is really a point where you're kind of coming to an understanding of what the problems are, and you're looking at things kind of with critical and analytical thinking. So at this point, you want to define, synthesize, and converge. So this is a good opportunity to kind of cluster those insights where you kind of want to understand, based on your wide breadth of research, you want to start to kind of identify those themes. you want to look at areas of opportunities, kind of starting to really create that game plan. And then ultimately, you kind of want to end with a list of how might we questions and really have that brief to then take into the second diamond. So really making sense of all the things you've collected. Another way to kind of think about this is you're essentially Marie Kondoing your discover phase, where you're just like, oh, I've collected everything, but what's really important or what threads can leave me to kind of significant findings? So really holding each and every article you've collected, each and every insight, and asking, does this spark joy? Will this lead to something important? So yeah, again, you know, it's an opportunity to, once you've cast the net far and kept it broad, to really throw the spanks on everything and keep it cinch.
Yeah, I love that analogy. That's so great. It's definitely an analogy that sparks joy, so I'm gonna hold on to it dearly.
Speak of things that get it right and get it tight, we've got our Hotline Design Hotline question for the week.
Hey, Hotline Design Hotline. I'm Alex, and I'm a long-time listener and first-time caller. I'm interested in using the double diamond process, but I'm worried that it's too theoretical. I'm hoping you can share your real-life experience of applying the double diamond to your work. Thanks.
Thank you for calling, Alex. I think you're absolutely right. When you look at it, it can be quite theoretical, and you can look at it and be like, oh, I don't understand how you actually apply this. But I think using some of the methods that we described earlier can actually really help. So if someone feels like it's really theoretical in your team, the easiest way to kind of explain it to them from my perspective is to give them examples of the activities that you need to do at each stage. So for example, you can just tell them that you start broad, and you want to find out about the project or the product as much as possible. At the end of the day, it's very difficult to start coming up with ideas for problems we don't understand. So just communicating to people that at the start, we just need to find out what we don't know. So we need to sit down and do a little bit of research, after which we need to apply basically, as Lauren was saying, a little bit of critical thinking to that research. So it's important to kind of figure out what the stories that we want to tell our stakeholders are. So this would be in the define stage, in the converge stage, and make sure that we understand what are the actual insights of the research that we got. I think, as, I don't know, did Einstein say this? If you don't know how to explain it simply, you don't understand it well enough or something. Yeah, I think it's just about getting past the theoretical side and just making sure that you understand why the process is important. And then it's probably a lot easier to kind of get people on board and explain it.
Yeah. So thank you for the question. I think that's great. I think the double diamond process is such a good way of explaining or just encapsulating the entire design process, but obviously it can risk coming across very theoretical if you kind of just play that back to your stakeholders. And I think, just wanted to echo what Lavinia said, you know, it's quite good to use that as a diagram and just kind of show them how the overall design process is going to proceed. But then it's important also to back that up with activities. And I think in the Design Council website as well, they kind of suggest different activities for each stage of the double design, of the double diamond process. So you can try and, you know, after showing your stakeholders that double diamond process diagram, you can then kind of cover off as well some of the different activities that you would run in each stage, so that they have a better idea of why exactly you're doing this. And just in my own personal experience, when I was part of the innovation team at our company, we often ran a lot of workshops with C-suite stakeholders where we would try and take them through this entire design process in one day. And obviously that was quite tricky, but we used the double diamond process as a base for coming up with those activities. So for example, we would do user interviews upfront before the workshop to try and get as much insight as possible as part of the discover phase, and then capture all of those quotes and start maybe structuring them a little bit, maybe not too much, but just enough to kind of give the stakeholders a glimpse of the overall themes coming up from those stakeholder interviews. And then as part of the workshop itself, we would actually get them to continue theming some of these post-its, or come up with their own post-its and put it into different clusters as part of the existing clusters. And then, you know, we would also try and, I think, rather than rely too heavily on the double diamond process itself, it was just more about using those general principles of convergence and divergence. So giving people inspiration so that they have, you know, it doesn't limit their thinking and they can be as creative as possible by relying on those sources of inspiration. So that's the divergence part of it. And then getting them to really prioritize things and say which ideas they like the most. And that's kind of that the convergence part of it. So kind of bringing it down again and just kind of repetitively going through that process. So feeding people lots of different types of inspiration and then forcing them to prioritize or select things. And I think it's more those principles of convergence and divergence that you can rely on rather than needing to stick too strictly to the double diamond process.
Amazing. Yeah, building on things that you've both said, Yusin and Lavinia, and thanks so much for your question, Alex. So I too have kind of used the double diamond in an innovation project, which was like 12 weeks of kind of rapid prototyping and quickly going through the double diamond phase, the double diamond process. Quickly going through the double diamond process. And in this innovation project, it was really one where we're working with the stakeholders. Like for everyone in our agile team, there was a stakeholder equivalent that was shadowing that person. So the double diamond was great. It's a very visual process that clearly outlines kind of what the next stages are. So it was really great to We ended up doing two of these kind of like innovation projects. So it was really great in the first one to have those stakeholders shadowing you through the double diamond. And then the second one, seeing the stakeholders really come into their roles and they were familiar with the double diamond and then kind of apply it. It's almost like a checklist. It's a very clear and defined process. So I found that that was really great to get stakeholder, not only stakeholder involvement, but then to build skills in the stakeholders. So for that next kind of project, they were able to really run with the diamond fairly independently.
I love that association with the checklist. I think that's a really good point. Like if people look at it and they're like, oh, this looks super theoretical, then probably like a checklist, a plan, a roadmap, something that they're used to seeing, you can definitely transform this into one of those things just to give people the confidence that you basically have a process in place.
Mm-hmm.
And just happens to be the double diamond, but they don't necessarily need to know that if they're not necessarily into it.
Yeah, and you can even like color code it or just even put like open thinking kind of beside the divergence, and then kind of convergence is just like focusing in. You can kind of change the language a bit if it's not resonating with your stakeholders.
Love it.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for writing in, Alex. And of course, if you want to be featured on Hotline Design Hotline, you can always send in your question to anchor.fm/hotlinedesignpod. And ladies, I think that about does it for part one of the double diamond process. So now we have one diamond ready and in our hands. So until next time, where we get the second diamond, you can find us on Instagram at hotlinedesignpod and then hotlinedesignpod@gmail.com. Thanks so much, everyone, and catch you next time.
We're sorry. You have reached a number that has been disconnected. Please check the number and try your call again.